What's going on, everyone? This is Jack Allen coming at you with another episode of Conspiracy or Just a Coincidence. As always, go follow my socials while I'm there. And if they rip me out, they will not know because I am a seed. There's some quote like that. You guys know, you guys get it. I'm just making a joke. But go follow me on Instagram at Conspiracy or JAC. Website conspiracyorjustacoincidence.com and my new revived Twitter account at Kojak Podcast, and go follow me on there. And I got all my links on my website, my link tree, and everything like that. And if you want to support the show, I've got a few ways. You can Venmo or PayPal or Patreon or my website. So I got all these little ways that if you want to support the show, I'm honored. If you can leave a review, I'm even more honored about that, to be honest. Money, you know, I'm honored when someone is willing to give their hard earned money to support the show, because it just means so much. So if you leave a review though, guys, I know times are tough. We don't live in the great 1960s economy, 1950s economy anymore, baby. But yeah, leave a review, support the show. I'm honored. I'm just thankful you guys enjoy it and listen and learn something. Today's episode, we'll start it after this intro, is my boy Carl Hassel. Carl, I met him on Twitter, as I said, super knowledgeable guy. And we talk this Peyote Way Church, and he'll get into it. But basically, it's another church that's still going on that promotes psychedelic drug usage, pulling us away from Christianity, pulling you to these beings and mindsets you reach only with psychedelics or like crazy amounts of yoga and meditation, which are they're beneficial on, you know, they relax you, but you're opening doors that I don't know if you can close. And Carl was able to get out of this church, but he'll tell you all about it. This guy, who ran the church, was CIA or FBI, you know, he was intelligence, just like a Manson-esque kind of character, pulling people away, these outliers, like myself, people, the drug world and music industry, and maybe this is hard for people to understand, but the drug usage is only increased because of the music and entertainment world, and I'm sure many people accept that, but I've said many times, rap music made me think drug dealing was cool and that doing drugs was a okay thing. And that was what I wanted to be. I came from a beautiful suburban home. I was, you know, relatively popular in school and all these things. But for some reason, drugs gave me this confidence boost that I needed. I just always wanted everyone to like me. And I still want people to like me, but I'm not good at arguing. But it gets all these people that may have found, and I escaped it, but drug usage and promoting this. And why do you think that the mainstream media pushes, you know, legalizing all drugs and decriminalizing them? And I agree with that in some aspects. I do. I don't, you know, I was in jail. Did I necessarily belong in jail? Was I a violent criminal? No, but it's not an easy answer. Is it a net positive to have drugs readily and easily accessible for adults? No. And if you're going to say yes, I would argue with you a lot because I lived it. There's not, if, you know, heroin was legal, would have my problems been any less? A little bit. Would have just taken me longer to lose everything? Yeah, it would have extended the process out. So I don't know what the answer is, but Carl talks about this Peyote Church and their ties with Mormonism, which is another military operation cult group. And yeah, so it's a great episode. I'll put Carl's links in my show notes here. He's got a lot of them. And go follow Carl at Carl Hassel 4 on Twitter. All right, guys, I'm Jack Allen. Support the show if you can, but please leave a review. It would really mean a lot. I've been getting a lot of new listeners lately. If you're new and you enjoy it, leave a good review. And even if you hate it, leave a review. Tell me what bothers you. And if it's something within my ability to fix, I will fix. If it's just my opinion, then come on. Then you reach out, come on the show, and I would love to discuss it with you. All right, guys. Thanks for listening. I love you all. You're all amazing. make this year 20 the best year, the best you, and I'm going to do the same. I'm on a whole new high protein diet, chicken and veggies, and we all can do it, guys. So I love you all. Believe in yourself, believe in your family, believe in God, and we will get through this chaos together. All right, my friends, go follow me. Peace. All right, everyone, welcome to another episode of Conspiracy or Just a Coincidence. So today we got 2 in 1 week. I have a super special guest. So you may have seen Carl in the chat on YouTube. He's everywhere. He's on Weave Reg chat. He's always on Twitter. He's one of such a knowledgeable guy that we just started like talking. You know, the internet has done many great things, and bringing people, like-minded people together is definitely one of them. So Carl, and I'll put your links below. Thanks for coming on the show, dude. Thanks for being such an awesome, I hate to say audience person, but whatever term you want to use, I'm just glad I got to meet you and now face to face.
Well, thank you, sir. That's a hell of a buildup. I'm embarrassed and flattered.
No, but Carl, go follow Carl. Like, really, people, like I was just saying to you earlier on the internet, you know, some people listen to this stuff, they're like new, and I would consider myself relatively new, but like every topic that I do, I feel like you already even know about it. You're adding stuff in the chat that I have no idea about. So I'm really excited for this show to hear what you got to talk about.
Well, you know what I try to do, Jack, is I will only speak from experience. I don't argue Bible. I don't argue mechanics or math. I don't argue politics. I will only speak from experience of my life, what I know and what I can prove. Mm-hmm. And that keeps things a whole lot simpler than getting lost in space and chasing around.
I love it, dude. I agree. I think that's a good way to, because everyone wants to argue on the internet. And when I first saw, I would get blown away because I wouldn't know that, you know, I'd be arguing a point and just get demolished. And I respect anybody that's got the knowledge to demolish, you know, anyone on the internet. So I think that's a good rule to live by.
Well, I don't do it to blow people up unless they're ugly to me. Then I can be a real hillbilly. I'm pretty affable and gregarious.
I agree. So what's the topic that put the title in the show title, but what are you here to discuss?
Well, I'm here to talk about the Peyote Way Church of God, which I was a member of from 1998 to 2015. And one of their co-founders actually knows personally almost every countercultural figure from the 60s and 70s. As I'll show in my links, he knew Leary, Peggy, and Billy Hitchcock. He knew John Griggs from the Brotherhood of Eternal Love. He lived at Millbrook. Barry Goldwater, the ex-president, put his artwork on display at their Goldwater department stores. Barry Goldwater and Richard Nixon were both celebrity collectors, along with Whoopi Goldberg and Bill Walton, the basketball player, and Xena the Warrior Princess.
Really, Xena too?
Yeah, as it turns out, this guy, like I said, knows every countercultural figure, which is great. But I had found out through reading that I got lied to and then went on a several-month reading binge about this group. In 2015, I was reading the Michael Collins Piper book, Final Judgment, and came across the name Manna Truhill, a.k.a. Emmanuel Trujillo. And it struck something in me, and I researched it because I knew that Emmanuel, it was common knowledge in the church membership, that he infiltrated some Nazi groups in the 50s in New York. So I ran the name Manna Truhill and came up with enough information to keep me busy for several months. And I wrote the church some scathing emails and had some back and forth and quit. I was a lifetime member and a third degree clergy. Wow. Or a first degree clergy. I'm sorry. It turns out Emmanuel went under at least 10 different aliases. And in the 1950s, he infiltrated the National Renaissance Party while working with major spies like guys named Stepanowski and Sanford Griffith, who were bankrolling him. He was on the payroll of the ADL and infiltrated the National Renaissance Party and basically took it over.
What was the National Renaissance Party's like beliefs?
That was a New York rightist neo-right group.
Okay.
That basically started riots on the street and handed out a lot of anti-Semitic literature, and they held meetings at different apartments.
Okay.
Well, Emmanuel took it over, him and another girl, a girl named Ruth Ross, which wasn't her real name. And they were both students at the communist-led Jefferson School in New York. It was a communist school. He got out of the army, joined this school. The next thing you know, he also was an FBI informant. He played a major part in the second trial of Mickey Jelke, the oleomargarine heir, in his prostitution trial.
Okay.
Emmanuel was taping his apartment. Emmanuel was taping his own apartment and recording everything that was going on there and turned it all over to the FBI for Jelke's second trial.
Nice. Well, always good. Always good.
And you'll find looking through the links that Emmanuel has claimed one quarter blood Apache, one half blood Apache, and full blooded Apache. There's an FBI file where he jumps on a table screaming, "I'm full blooded Apache, blah, blah, blah." And this is all, and he also says that he was full-blooded Apache born on the San Carlos Reservation.
Kind of like Elizabeth Warren. So maybe they're related.
This book right here.
Oh, yeah. I got it right. Yeah. The red one.
He wrote that in 1955. And that's some of the earliest primary source documentation we have of him, besides the FBI files from 53. In that book, it says he was born in Pennsylvania, not on the San Carlos Apache Reservation. And it says he got out on a 30% disability from a parachute jump. Now, Peyote Way literature tells you that he was a war hero, had a plate put in his head, a rod put in his leg, had his face rebuilt. That's not what it says in his book about in the chapter about the author. And now they're saying he's half Jewish. So the narrative has changed over the years. He's half Apache and half Jewish.
Man, he's everything.
In his book, it doesn't say that he's an artist, a potter, a painter. It doesn't say he owns a company. He's got a whole history of being part of motorcycle gangs from the 1950s.
Oh.
He rode with the Mercury Riders and somebody else. He's mentioned, I included links to some of the 14 books I have him listed in. I've got 14 books and two pamphlets, and I knew this guy. I talked to this guy off and on, you know, and had no idea. They completely ignore this background, and they say they're not connected with the Mormons, but they're actually a Mormon front. They belong to something called the United Way, which I supplied the links for. They are a recognized sect of the Mormon Church.
Wow. So what is the Peyote Way like belief system?
They believe that the peyote plant, the hallucinogenic cactus peyote, is a deity. It is God. They had to believe that in order to get their religious clearance, their 401s.
Ah, so it's used in ceremony. So it's legal this way.
It's a private individual ceremony. They took the Native American church ceremony, and instead of having a group full of people in a teepee all watching each other.
Right.
You know, and being self-conscious of themselves, they made it an individual experience, which really is a lot better.
Oh, really?
You know how cool you look and if your feathers are adjusted just right.
Right.
So really, there are some tenets of the church that I agree with, like conservation of peyote. It's almost completely depleted because of people going down there and picking it all that don't know how to replenish it and take care of it. If people are going to use any of these kind of drugs, they should grow their own supply. I'm all for conservation.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
I don't advocate taking psychedelics at all. I don't advocate taking any kind of drugs. All drugs, including psychedelics, keep you from becoming the best person you can be.
I totally agree with you.
But if people want to take drugs, they should be able to experience that, just like a beer or a shot of bourbon or a joint.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not a fucking, whatever, screaming about. I don't tell people what to do. I don't tell people how to think. I can only tell people where I've been and what I've learned, you know.
Yes.
So that's where they're at. And they have a cottage industry called Mana Pottery, which is basically the financial arm of the group. And they say that company was started in 1948, but I have found several examples where they actually have pottery marked 1946, which is interesting. And Emmanuel's job in the 1950s was cranking out anti-Semitic literature and sending it all over Europe in crates. And he was scaring Jews into donations to support the ADL with this phony anti-Semitism.
Huh, interesting. So, okay, yeah. Continue. I don't want to interrupt.
Okay, well, after the Mickey Jelke trial in 55, he went up north to Canada. He snuck into Canada, and they got involved in a cannabis scheme where he was going to smuggle cannabis back to New York. Well, he got popped at the border because one of his partners was an undercover Royal Canadian Mounted Policewoman, narc. And she busted them all at the counter at the border, and all three of them got sent up for 2 years in a Canadian prison. The next thing you know, he comes out and shows up in 1960 as an Indian artist, and he was given his first studio by Mrs. Will Rogers Jr., the Will Rogers of the country western American fame,
okay,
movie star, singer, etc., comedian. Well, they gave him his first studio in Tubac, Arizona. And this is where he came out as full-blooded Apache. The Canadian authorities said he had at least 10 aliases.
As any normal person does.
He was in Canada illegally. So right. That 2 years put a crimp in his style for a while there. And right. Then when he gets out, all of a sudden he's the peyote guru. And you'll see in the church history on their official website, they completely ignore everything he did in the 50s. It's completely ignored. They said he's a war hero, got out of the service. A peyote, and then he's got the revelation and started an all-race peyote group. And he's instrumental in establishing all-race peyote use. He won a 1967 landmark case in Denver, Colorado. His studio was busted with a large quantity of peyote, LSD, and hashish. He admitted to the peyote and said, I don't know anything about the LSD and the hash. The case went through the courts, and he at the end won. He was given his peyote clearance because he was using it in good faith in a religious texture. Now, curiously enough, I sent you one or two 1987 articles where he's described as, like I said earlier, there's quarter blood, half blood, and full blood. In 1987, his son came out and said he's not an Indian at all. That he started that scam to sell pottery in New Mexico. Well, then the son went underground because the old man was threatening his life and he was hiding. And the DA, the Texas Attorney General, couldn't find him.
They couldn't find the son.
He had to go into hiding because the old man was after him.
Good father.
There's a couple topics I'm not getting into here, and I told you in the email what they were.
Yeah.
So we're going to 86 that for right now. But he also showed up in San Francisco in 1967 at the same time as Tim Leary, Charles Manson, the same month. Tim Leary, Charles Manson.
What are the odds of that?
He knew the Diggers, Peter Coyote and Bill Walton are both members of Peyote Way, but they're not registered. They're not on the rolls. He's known those people forever. In 1967, the San Francisco Oracle put an article that said, Manna is the man. And then they retracted it with Walter Bauert and Michael Bowen co-signing on it and Hare Krishna. And a cannabis smuggler named Michael something or other, his name is on there, but they turned around and said, oh, Manna's the head of the Native American church. He's cool. He's not the man. Well, first of all, he's not the head of the Native American church. He never was.
Okay.
And he applied for an all-race charter, claims he got it, and then it was rejected. An all-race charter,
that? Yeah.
That means he checked in with the Native American church and said, hey, I want to include Anglos in this.
Okay, I see.
And supposedly they said, yeah, and then supposedly lost their nerve when LSD became illegal in October of 66. What's curious is Emmanuel is one of about a dozen people that all came to San Francisco within a three-year period of each other. And they all came from the Lower East Side, Columbia University, the Village, Greenwich Village, hotbed of commie friggin' cultural Marxism. He's an admitted communist. You know, he died in 2010. He was a trip. He was a real trip, man.
Wow.
But like I said, they're tied to military intelligence and masonry. There's a lot of bragging about being connected to having Freemasons and military intelligence in the family of one of the co-founders. And, you know, that's part of that other topic I can't get into in part one here. It's just all over the place.
Right.
But yeah, they're a Mormon front with hot, heavy ties to military intelligence going back to the 1940s, the late 40s. Emanuel's work, some of his artwork is included in the 1954 Senate hearings on fascist hate groups. And he had hand-drawn pictures of Adolf Hitler. And you could see in the corner, it says MANA, May 53. You know, you could see it on the Internet Archives.
Okay, and yeah.
I only included a smidgen of FBI files. There's literally several hundred pages of his activities. And even when his name is not in the file, they got it redacted. You still know who they're talking about by the subject matter. They're talking about the guy that's tasked with going down south on his motorcycle to start riots on campuses and develop gun connections with Colombians in Georgia. Fascinating FBI crap on this guy.
Well, yeah, I saw all those documents you sent me with, you know, there was over and over, and a lot of it was blacked out. So that must have been like his name they were blocking out, but you were able to deduce who that
and
was.
How many had his name on there?
Yeah, right.
Two or three times on the same page. Right. Now, he knew Eustace Mullins, if you know who Eustace Mullins is.
Oh, yeah, he's an author, right?
He's
anti-Semitic.
Yes. Okay. Yeah, I was trying to find a way to frame that without both of us getting fucking blanked out here. But
so he was friends with Eustace?
He knew him.
Okay.
Yeah. And I can say, like I said in my other appearances on YouTube, the last time I saw Emanuel, I was invited in his room to chat. He called me up on the phone once after a surgery I had. One of my many surgeries, but my son and I were in his room chatting with him, and we're looking around, and he still had an SS flag on one wall,
no way,
and a National Socialist flag on the other wall, and a drawer full of German marks. So he was still, you know, in his 1950s days, he was a pimp as well as a distributor of anti-Semitic literature, and the FBI reports busted his apartment. He had swords and German swords and guns with swastikas on them and all kind of German National Socialist literature in his room and a picture of Hitler on the wall. A week or two later, he would have communist literature on the table and a picture of Stalin on the wall. The FBI files are hilarious. And so is the book called Dreamer of the Day, the book about Francis Parker Yoki, loaded with stuff about Emanuel's escapades. And he would have girls in his room described as younger than 14 years old by the FBI, walking around in their underwear and various states of nudity to keep the guys enthralled with the lectures that Emanuel was ranting out. He got busted. They raided his apartment. He escaped scot-free. Absolutely nothing happened.
Manson-esque. It's, you know, just like Manson's whole history has been that filled with that. So it seems like a similar archetype is being created with this guy.
Well, and he was in the Millbrook psychedelic house in the 60s. He lived in the front house doing his pottery. And when they were busted, he was the only one not popped.
Mm. He's just a lucky guy, Carl. Yeah. Quit being so conspiratorial.
And if you look, I sent you numerous pictures of the medallion with the circumscribed lotus on it. Mm-hmm. You'll see that all the clergy had one. And I sent a picture of mine, too. On one side, it says LSD. And on the other side, it has the circumscribed lotus. That symbol goes back to Tim Leary days. I supplied two pictures, one of Tim Leary wearing that medallion with John Griggs, who was the head of the Brotherhood of Eternal Love. And I sent another picture of Tim Leary and Rosemary with her wearing one, as well as the pictures of my actual medallion. But he was a friend of Rosemary Leary right up to her death and kept a signed letter by her in a frame on his desk. He knew them quite well, very intimately. And in the early 60s, Leary and Billy Hitchcock of Hitchcock fame were scouting around for land for Emanuel to open up a psychedelic ashram. They scouted out three different properties and paid for a few. And eventually Emanuel and Bill Haynes, the psychedelic guru, had an ashram where they were taking LSD and peyote and doing pottery called the Sri Ashrama Pottery Company. Eventually, Emanuel split off that and started his own MANA pottery, which my son and I painted a couple of cups and bowls.
Wow.
Which are now in the Museum of the American Indian at the Smithsonian.
No way. Really? Oh my God.
Oh yeah, we painted quite a bit of artwork that ended up there. Apache artist Emmanuel Trujillo. And I didn't send pictures of my son and I actually working on the artwork. Like I said, I've got so much grammar on this. It's right here, this. You see that, Mike, where I'm pointing?
Where you're pointing?
My cursor?
No, I don't see the cursor. Okay.
Well, look on the bottom where it says faith and trust. That yeah. symbol, you'll see that throughout a whole bunch of stuff. And Matthew, one of the co-founders, admits that he got the idea for the church. He copied off of Leary's How to Start Your Own Religion. And if you go through a lot of those links, you'll see that symbol continuously. And that's the symbol of the Peyote Way also.
Wow.
It's all connected.
How large would you say this church was in its prime?
They're still active, going right now today. And they're passing people in there for spirit walks every weekend.
Wow. And so how, like, can you have like an estimate? Let's say when you were in it, how many members of this church were there?
I don't know. Maybe 200 worldwide
okay.
or so. I have no idea. Most of the members are in California, and most of the members right. are young men.
Interesting.
Of course.
Interesting.
Huh. Basically, we're looking at weaponized anthropology and academic fraud. Excuse me.
No, yeah. Why do you say that, like, weaponized anthropology and fraud?
It's a religion that he developed all on his own, and it looks like he's not even a friggin' Apache, and he's certainly not Jewish.
Right.
There's number one. That's academic fraud. Number two, I didn't send it to you, but there's a 1968 book by the Smithsonian Institute on American Indian artists, and there's one line about him and a large chapter about one of his wives, his ex-wives. The guy came out of nowhere. What was your question?
Oh, no, I was asking about the fraud of, like how you said it was fraud of anthropology.
Well, the Native American church doesn't approve of this group. They said it's bullshit and white people have no business fooling with peyote. I myself have a 45-year history with American Indians. Some of my very good old friends have a supai. And I've been taking peyote off and on since 1975, you know.
Oh, Carl, I bet you got some stories, Carl.
No, I have a lot of stories about a lot of things. But, there's that symbol again right there.
Right. I see it. Yeah. So what would you say? I'm getting from, I know nothing of this story except for what, you know, you sent me and talked about, but it seems like it's another Manson style, like creating this, I don't want to use the word cult, but I don't know if that's applicable, but almost a cult like following, correct? Is that what
he's not worshiped.
Okay.
You know, this is a very individualized thing. Like, there's no confessions. There's no group therapy. It's pretty much here. Have some peyote. That peyote will figure it out. You know, you'll get it straight through that.
Mm-hmm.
So in that respect, and he actually shunned most contact.
Like contact with press?
With people?
Okay.
Oh, no, they love publicity. If they can tightly control it.
Well, then, so what's the, you know, a few questions, like, what's its connection to Mormonism? We'll start with that. So what would
you're
be the
part
big...
of something called the United Order, which was okay. started by Joseph Smith, and you tithe all your earnings and everything you own back to the church. I left the links up there for that.
Okay.
And clergy, people, first, second, third degree clergy are expected to follow the Word of Wisdom, Section 89, Mormon Dietary Guideline.
Hmm. And what's the point? Is just for financial reasons? That's why they're kind of getting lumped together?
No, I don't think so. They're making plenty of money on spirit walks and pottery.
Okay. I just didn't know if there was some connection, like why it's getting tied in with Mormonism.
The Mormons run the entire state of Arizona, you know, for the most part.
No way. I didn't know that.
They're surrounded by four prisons down there. The Peyote Way Church is surrounded by four prisons and an Indian reservation. It's all Mormons. Arizona is run by Mormons.
Is it? I just assumed Utah. That's all brain.
No.
Huh. Since the Joseph Smith days, they have a large Mormon population in Arizona?
They pretty much control what's called the Arizona Strip, the north end of the Grand Canyon up there, the Utah-Arizona border.
I see. Okay.
That's really heavy Mormon country. And so is down south, down by Benson, Thatcher, etc., Klondike, Benson.
Okay. I never heard that before. And then so the point of this is it like obviously during this time of this, was it just experimentation? That's why they're pushing out like peyote and LSD to experiment on the populace, see how it'll respond. Or what's the point of, you know, propping this guy up, giving him access, keeping him safe when he gets arrested? Like what's behind that? Why would, you know, the military industrial complex do something like that?
Well, my personal opinion is, with everything I've learned and seen and experienced and am still learning through what you call truthers and whatnot, my own experiences and learning and looking, I am convinced that it's part of a gigantic, multi-tiered, overarching plot to destroy the country and bring in communism, cultural Marxism. They are taking people away from their culture, their family, and their religion with these fake psychedelic visions.
Mm.
And this is part of the depopulation. You don't see a big Asian contingent. You don't see a big female contingent. You see a large white male contingent.
Interesting.
Hippie guys and druggies.
Right.
That's all of the same fantasy they've been pumping out since the 60s. It's just repackaged. You know, I sent you some other pictures of Dr. Alexander Shulgin, the MDA chemist. They're connected with him. I sent you two pictures. They're connected with MAPS. I sent you a picture of MAPS and a couple of people with Shulgin. This is all connected. All of this psychedelic push is connected to recreate the fall of man and bring about basically communism. This is all tied together.
Wow. And I think that's so. Do you think his like flip-flopping between how you said he had pictures of Hitler and then would change it to Stalin just to try and grab any like outlier people lost? So when they come, you know, maybe they share this belief.
I can't speculate on what somebody was thinking in the 50s or right now. I only know what is.
Right. Well, so have you ever, DMT, you have like Joe Rogan talk about that a lot, and psychedelics obviously are gaining in popularity. I mean, they're trying to medicinalize mushrooms.
Again, the same shit they did for 45 and 55 years ago.
Interesting.
I'm an old guy. I got a long memory.
Right.
So I was 10 years old in 1967. I very much remember.
So it was a similar type of was it as mainstream as it is now? Because now you even have like, I guess it was with Timothy Leary as a doctor. You have the same type of area, at least pushing the similar.
Yeah, psychiatry is pushing it, and end of life people. It's just more sophisticated now and has a lot more technology and money behind it. The same basic ideas, end of life, post-traumatic stress, you know, finding God within and all the other horseshit, hippie thinking and goddess worship that goes along with it.
Yeah. Have you ever, I did like this quick, and I don't know, I'm sure, I don't know if you've heard this theory before, but it was this one guy who does a lot of videos, and he did about how DMT, a lot of these people, and maybe I don't know if you've experienced this, when a group of people take these strong hallucinogens, they like almost have a shared trip. Have you ever experienced that?
I have with LSD doses, yes.
Okay. So
and peyote, actually.
So he was saying that when they do these shared trips or whatever, oftentimes they see like a clown-like figure or a jester. And he, you know, whether it's a crazy theory, but he ties this together as that's where, like in the Arizona area, there's this Indian, I don't know if it's the Hopi Indians, but they're one of their gods that, or whatever you want to call them. They wear black and white stripes. They paint their body black and white stripes. I'll bring it up. And they have like a red hat, like our jesters have. And they would take peyote.
Those are all deities. Those are Kachina deities.
Okay, deities.
The Hopi aren't a peyote tribe.
They are not?
No.
So
there might be individuals that take it, yes, but they're not known as a tribe that eats peyote as a rule.
Okay. But yeah, so you're saying like that this was one of their deities.
Well, I don't know what a shared trip is. I need to go back a little bit. I don't know what a shared trip is. I thought you were talking about like a mental awareness under high doses of LSD or peyote. I don't know anything about this clown shit. That looks like Coco Pelli. That looks like Coco Pelli. Those are all jesters and clowns that teach lessons.
And
like yeah, in the Hopi religion, the wolf kachina teaches courage and perseverance will get you through any situation. All these other ones. Now, this has nothing to do with peyote.
Okay. Well, so he was just saying that like this was a one of their deities or whatever, and he was trying to make the connection that high doses of hallucinogen, people have these shared like where they're almost tripping and seeing the same things. And he was saying like, are these demons? Are these like actual beings that are out of our normal sight that, you know, talk to people when they're under hallucinogens to corrupt them, or I don't know a better word. I don't know if corrupts the
ways with it. Sure.
Yeah. And so that was what he was trying to make this connection. And that's, he even tried to say like, is that where they get the black and white from Freemasonry? And yeah,
who knows, was, man.
Yeah. But I just thought it was an interesting theory that you like, again, these black and white hallucinogens, which have this huge push that are so mainstream, and people all, you know, they, the magic elves or whatever they, these people say, like Alex Jones said that, I don't know if you've seen that on Joe Rogan, but if that's trying to bring people again, like just other steps to take you further away from God and interacting with these beings, whether
they're mind fuck.
Yeah. Right. And just to confuse people. And if you have them worshiping a demon or Satan, you've won. You're going to be able to corrupt the whole society.
Oh yeah. Psychedelics do open you up to things. And the more you take, the more you stay open. It takes a while to sometimes never really. I have a friend. He stopped taking hallucinogens in the mid 70s. And he actually won't even allow himself an aspirin to this day. But
wow.
He said all he could do was see demons every time he looked at someone, and he had to stop taking LSD, you know, and I understand where he's coming from with that.
Right.
And yeah. I only took DMT once, but it was made in a biker lab, and that was in 78 or 79. And I didn't see any friggin' elves or glass deer or
anything. Right. Yeah. I mean, I've taken, you know, lots of, not as many as you, but I've taken them and I've never seen anything like that, but never a super high dose or any, you know, I've never wanted to be that.
I always know somebody's full of shit when they bring up Carlos Castaneda. It's like, if you're talking Carlos Castaneda, you know absolutely nothing about peyote. So
I don't, who's Carlos Castaneda?
I'm sure some of your audience does. It's like the first go-to when people start talking peyote, and you know they don't know what the frig they're talking about, because it's nothing at all like that.
So I also, so you said that like how the Hopis, they were not a peyote tribe. So there's Native American tribes, or is that North American Indian tribes, that they, peyote was part of like their, it was a very integral part to their religion or the way they worship.
It still is. Yeah. The Native American church goes through about 15 million peyote buttons a year. The last time I looked.
Wow. I've never like I.
It's important to grow your own supply, because there's almost none left in Texas, and it's hard to get in and out of Mexico these days with that friggin' nightmare down there.
Yeah, right.
But it's almost depleted in Texas now. What little bit there was.
Carl, this is such a new world to me. I know different drugs, but not Native American. And do you? What's so from your like? What did was there positives that came out of you using peyote? Did that experience, do you think it was a net positive or a net negative?
Oh, it's a wonderful thing. It's a net positive. I think it's made me a better, more compassionate citizen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a really introspective drug. You really get into your actions. It's like doing an inventory, you know, in AA or NA.
Nice. I got that reference. You maybe some
what you're doing that makes right. you feel like shit, your guilt, you know, it all comes up. Your sins, your wrongs, all that comes up and you come to terms with it. And it can be quite cathartic besides being extremely beautiful. So, you know, it's psychedelic, and it takes a long time to go up. The peak lasts a long time and it takes a long time to wear off. You have to be prepared for it. You can't just gobble it and then go to Walmart, you know, and buy some tuna fish. It takes a great deal of preparation. You need to fast. You need to have your calendar blanked out for at least 3 to 5 days to do
it. Wow, really?
Integration. It's a very powerful experience. And, you know, 2, maybe 3 times a year is all you need, really.
Wow.
It's extremely powerful. And a lot of people won't do it right. You know, they just refuse to do it correctly. And then they have a bad experience, or they're puking the whole time, or nothing happened. And it's like, well, you know, you didn't do it correctly, period.
Yeah. Well, so what do you, what's your opinion on what this drugs and cultural Marxism and communism, why are these so seemingly they're always together?
Yeah, I think it's just part of the plan. You know, it distracts people and gets them chasing their tail. And, you know, it's a bunch of shit, man, when you go through the other side of it. You know, I'll tell you what, the reggae movement is filled with the same kind of shit. The reggae movement and the psychedelic movement have zero acknowledgement of the war crimes of Israel and zero acknowledgement of the suffering of the Palestinian people. It's a taboo subject. It's not brought up. Right. It's not talked about. And in the Freemasonry movement, you'll see lots of people. I can send you pictures doing that in front of their belly, making the triangle.
Right. Yes. Yes. Trump does that too.
The reggae movement is loaded with that. And I got into an argument one time with a reggae freak, a young Jewish kid that goes, I won't say his Rasta name on the air, but he looks like he just got back from Jamaica, right? Okay. He's a young Jewish kid, well off, moneyed. But I got into an argument with him, and he said Freemasonry's been around before reggae is whatever it was. That he was so full of shit. It's like, dude, you know, and he's talking about Jah and this and that. And I go, you ever heard of God the Father? You know, and then he like blanked me out. He unfriended me or whatever. I don't want to hear this bullshit, this hippie thing. Everybody's a phony. They're hiding behind a name. Oh, we're all so cool and psychedelic. It's a very little clicky, disgusting little thing. It's ultimate selfishness. It enables selfishness, these kinds of drugs, with a false idea, with false, you know, it's all bull crap. It's a fantasy.
And do you think also during like these hallucinogenic states, it's easier to get put ideas in people's heads and almost lead them away?
Absolutely. All psychedelics are suggested, suggestogens, I guess.
Yeah, right. Because that's, you know, that was like Manson's tactic, get them super high and whisper in their ear over and over again. You can kind of clearly or allegedly to what he could make them do whatever he wanted.
Yeah, you know, you can convince people of anything under psychedelics. You really can.
Yeah.
I've seen it, and I've seen people lose their mind and actually become possessed, ending in suicide and things like that, and people that are just lost. You know, I had enough, you know, there was a time when I had hair down to my elbows and a ZZ Top beard. Joe psychedelic. I grew a cocaine bush once. I grew opium once. You know, I grew cannabis for many years off and on.
Right.
You know, I went real deep, man. You know, I went real deep.
Yeah.
Did some large L deals in my Grateful Dead days.
Wow. But you didn't know what you know now about like how Grateful Dead, you know, all that. There wasn't it their acid dealer. He was CIA. I forget his name.
Oh, they are loaded with CIA, Scientology, military intel. That goes on and on with those guys.
Yeah, that's so man. You could write a book, Carl,
because they too are a whole bag of.
Yeah, and I guess I mean people like when someone who's not into conspiracy would respond like, what's the point? Okay, so this is all these different groups, they're ran by the CIA. What's the point? Is it to get your outlier people that maybe used to go to the church? Now they're in
money.
These.
There's massive money in that. Massive money in escape and the hope of a better thing and being part of a group, feeling that importance. It's like a milieu control. You know, they control everything we see and hear and compartmentalize it, and they put everybody through a funnel, and you got the druggies and the hippies and the true believers and the Rasta heads, and it's all the same shit. It's all the same program that's being worked. Ooh. Just different categories of people that it attracts.
Ooh, that is huge. And I guess it's all similar set of beliefs, just like you, I think you said the term, they repackaged it.
Yes.
Decade or whatever.
And you got the ringleaders, you know, you got the Learys, the Hitchcocks. Nowadays, you know, you got the Rogans and all these other people that support that. And this the fake ayahuasca shit, Most of these ayahuasca guys, a lot of them are Jewish and they're all shamans. All you have to do is research this. I'm not talking through my hat. Just research ayahuasca shamans. It's like, what the hell is going on here?
Right. Interesting.
It's a scam.
Yeah. And it, but it's not just purely financial. It's a belief system.
It's that also to distract. Yeah. And disrupt and enslave and just all of it. Distract. Get when people lost.
It's just hard to like believe. I struggle with like communism because, you know, obviously it's this evil economic system, but I think almost any economic, I mean, that communism has been supported by the, you know, the Rockefeller, all these big people, they've supported national socialism. They've supported capitalism. And sometimes I get, cause I'm younger than you and I am relatively newer in this world. And I think like, do they just make up these economic systems to have us fight over them? Is it just another division tactic? Because no matter what, they still run it at the top. So I don't know what economic system. So do you think is communism truly evil, or is it just the easiest way to break everyone down so they have no way of fighting back?
I don't know.
Well, hey, that's honesty. Do you know what I mean?
You want me to lie to you?
No, but do you have an opinion? Like, do you understand what I'm saying? It's like, I struggle with that because like these, you know, as you know, Wall Street funded the Soviets' rise. They funded Hitler's rise. I think
ultimately it's all about extracting money by any means necessary and any means possible. Mm-hmm. I think it's all about extracting money that ends in slavery and depopulation. any, you know, it's like people that have multiple businesses, any way they can extract that dough, man, they're doing it.
Yeah, that's true. I liked what you said also, how the people that join these groups, because I was lost in college, I was taking all these psychedelics, and you're right, it's like young white males, they don't know, maybe they're lacking confidence, or they're just confused a little bit, and that's when they fall into these groups, and a lot of them don't come out.
And it's all selfishness. It plays on selfishness. This feels good. I like this. And there's other people who think like me. We all got our timelines on. And we're all taking the same drug and having cosmic revelations.
Yes. That's such a key part.
People to feel like they belong is very strong in humans.
Yeah.
And that's, to feel right.
Right. You know, and I love.
Up, and then it's like, oh, shit. This was real.
I love what you said, selfish, because you.
That's what it is.
Yeah, because in this stage, you like get this like, oh, these people that are Christians, like you guys don't get it, man. And I know I'm being stereotypical with the way I'm talking there, but I think you go to that, you revert to that stage because it is hard to be a Christian. It is hard to do the right thing. So this seems so much easier if I just take hallucinogens and say like we all just want to free love and all these things like that. That's much easier than having two roads and having to pick the choice that is the much more difficult decision.
Yeah. But. And then a lot of times you expect other people to pick up the tab and pay your way. You know, a lot of the hippie lifestyle. It's like, what do you got to share, bro? But then they never seem to have anything when you need something shared.
That's so true.
You know, or it's all broken down and splintered in the little clicks, you know, with their secret signals. And Grateful Dead is like this too. Holy shit. Try getting up close, you know, in the days when the original was touring, you couldn't get near the stage because there'd be clicks of people and you'd have to have a password to get down there. All the really heavy druggies and psychedelic freak weirdos. You couldn't get anywhere close to the stage, especially at the Oakland Coliseum, because you needed a password.
That is wild.
You know, I've never seen this band before. A lot of you assholes were alive. And now I can't even get down close to band to see the band.
That is amazing. I've never heard this.
Really goofy, twisted little scene there with those people, man, with the Dead. I got so fucking, I was tired of it by the mid 80s. I really was. But I still was going to the shows and
how many
state benders.
How many shows did you go to of the Grateful Dead?
I probably saw them about 85 times from 1978 to 1995. And I saw the Jerry Garcia Band about 15 times, and I saw the other ones, and Dead and Company, and I saw Further 15 times with my son. We went to see Further 15 times.
Wow.
You know, I saw Bob Weir's Rat Dog twice. I was pretty heavy into it. I loved them. They were really like.
So what brought you into this, like into this, and then what got you out?
Well, I was turned on to the Illuminatus conspiracy back in the 70s when it first came out, and it blew my mind. You know, and I had already read The Psychedelic Experience, Be Here Now, The Art Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance, Autobiography of a Yogi. So I was pretty ready for this kind of shit. Okay. And I spent about half of the 70s homeless and being a psychedelic gypsy running around the country, spending my time between Grand Canyon and Berkeley. My God. And getting all whatever the hell happens there. But, you know, it was a very slow process. In the 80s, I worked steadily, but I was still a mess.
Okay.
I was just able to afford my lifestyle. And gradually, I just got sick of the whole lefty, hippie thinking, goddess worship. I was so sick of it because they were such sappy wimps. Excuse my lisp. But they were such sassy wimps and selfish little bastards. Selfish little bastards.
Yeah.
I just got tired of it very slowly. Then I got married and had a kid, you know, after rehab. And it was like, I just got so sick of the shit. And I was belonged to Peyote Way, you know, and I'd have several, I'd go a couple times a year, three times a year and take a peyote experience. But I was back home being a full-time dad and working until I got sick and had to retire. But, by that time, I was so goddamn sick of it. I can't even look at a hippie anymore. I absolutely can't stand them and all the shit they spew. It's such bullshit.
Right.
It really grinds my gears, man. The whole hippie lifestyle, all the bullshit. It's all ultimate selfishness. That's what it was. It's what it is.
Do you see the connection? I mean, I'm just thinking out loud. Like, I was also into the rave scene. And I see a lot of similarities between you're talking about and that group as well.
It's all an extension of the original acid tests in the early 60s. You had the acid tests that developed into the Grateful Dead scene and all the technology with the screens and the psychedelic effects. It all has come a long way, and it bled into the rave scene, which was created military intelligence again, just like punk. Just like New Wave, these are all created genres by military intelligence geniuses from Tavistock and the Frankfurt School. Very diabolical geniuses set all this crap up. You know, and then the tone of music was changed. The scale went from whatever it was to whatever it is now. You could research all that. The music goes right to that spinal cord, man. And Aldous Huxley said, Aldous Huxley suggested that Bill Kreutzmann play drums, and Billy Kreutzmann is one of the drummers for the Grateful Dead. We all know about Aldous Huxley.
Yes.
Well, Aldous Huxley, in one of his books, says the fastest way to turn a man into a raving animal is with flashing lights and beating drums.
Ooh.
Well, guess what? The Grateful Dead, the Allman Brothers, and Frank Zappa all had through their entire history two drummers and light shows. And who developed the light shows for the Grateful Dead? Military intelligence and the Air Force. Three members of the Grateful Dead came out of the Air Force, within 2 years of each other, and joined the Grateful Dead. You had Owsley, Tom Constantin, and Mickey Hart. And of course, Jerry was an army brat who got out mysteriously, just like Wavy Gravy of the Hog Farm.
I don't know them, but you know, insane. Obviously, we can see what the connection. Oh, dude,
I could regale you with true tales from Berkeley and other places. That
this also, I would love to hear all of those because this was before most of the listeners, our time. You know, like but I just
Peyote Way is still happening though; it's an ongoing thing. And what amazes me is all these friggin' people that do these shows. Everybody's doing Leary, MK Ultra, Millbrook. Mm-hmm. And they're all circling the drain doing the same limited hangout, but everybody misses Trujillo.
Yeah, everybody I've never heard of Emmanuel. Him.
And the people that research the rightist stuff, the neo-Nazis and shit, they all find him, but they don't see him in light of the Peyote Way shit because he's used 10 different friggin' aliases. So all the people that have written books on the rightist movements and the neo-Nazis that mention Emmanuel, they don't put it together with the Peyote Way. And all the people doing psychedelic research seem to miss this guy altogether. It's like I'm providing a very essential piece of the fucking puzzle.
Right.
And just not only is it research, but I lived it. I have documents from two different notary publics that I was a member of this group. I've got about 150 friggin' pictures. I only sent you two or three.
Yeah.
I was there, man.
Yeah.
You know? And the other stuff we talked about in the email is a whole bag of worms too.
Right.
And maybe we could get into sometime later, but
yeah.
You know, all people have to do, if they're researching this guy for themselves, make sure you type in as many names as possible. It's Manna Trujillo, Manna Pardeaton, Emmanuel Trujillo, James Coyle, Cochise, Manny Trujillo. He had all these names, and wow, that's how the FBI kept missing him. He actually drove to Texas to talk to the FBI when some of the members of Peyote Way got busted, and they didn't even put it together that he was the same guy from the 50s.
It also, and like how you said that he had the pottery shop. There was that guy in Weird Scenes in the Canyon, Vito and his freaks.
Oh, yeah, Vito Palookas.
Yes, and he started I guess I forgot the author's name, but that's what he said, that they were like they were the dancers that put these bands on the map. And I'm seeing like so many similarities between.
And Vito, he was related to the Winthrop Rockefeller.
Right. Yes, he was. He was a brother-in-law or whatever.
And a weird tie-in. They had the wig shop too with Jay Sebring.
Yes.
And he was selling drugs out of there.
Yes.
If you look at the movie with Johnny Depp playing the cocaine dealer.
Yes. Blow.
His connection was a fucking wig dealer.
You're
in LA.
Right. Oh my God.
Wonder if that was a skewed reference to Jay Sebring.
I bet it was. And I think Jay Sebring was homosexual, right? I'm pretty sure he was.
Yeah.
And so was, and Blow. That's an amazing, that was a great connection. Wow. Good for you, Carl. That was good.
Well, you want to hear another mind blower?
Yes.
You've seen the movie Eyes Wide Shut, right?
Yes.
Well, if you go back and look on the Internet Archives on the book Hollywood Babylon, part 1 and 2, on page 99 and 100, they talk about a real life party that took place at movie star Lionel Atwill's house. The party was hosted by a guy wearing a fucking bandana playing a piano.
Wow.
That was from a party in 1940. And Stanley Kubrick brought it into Eyes Wide Shut. That's based on a real thing.
Wow.
You can check it yourself.
I see Hollywood Babylon as Kenneth Anger, but I never have seen this.
I forget the piano player's name. But you could get both parts on the Internet Archives free and read them for yourself.
Oh, God, man. And what is, like, I still can't I can't make this connection. Like, the occult has been in intelligence forever. Since John Dee and Edward Kelly. But I can't make that. And, you know, they worked for, like, the Queen or the British, whatever. And I just I can't find out why. Like, that's, like, my biggest question is why. Why is in the Nazis and all these military, they all have these deep ties with occults and anti-Christian stuff. And I just can't, is it, in your opinion, is it purely just to push away people from Christianity, or is there like another, what are they trying to do, like a spell? I know that sounds silly.
I think it's both. Really, Christianity is the biggest obstacle. As Huxley told Tim Leary, Tim, your biggest enemy is the Bible.
Wow.
It's in quotes. You could look this stuff up. Your biggest enemy is the Bible.
That's a powerful quote. And then with the Beatles, right? Didn't they say we're bigger than Jesus?
Yeah. And he was referring to a book he read, but he actually was true. You know, we basically have the religion of Paulism now, Paul McCartney. And that's a whole bag of worms with the Paul is dead stuff. You know, I mean,
yeah,
I try to be specific and not get lost in things. We try to keep things focused versus spinning out of control and trying to handle everything at once.
Yeah, but you're right. I mean, look, that when you were growing up in this time, did you notice has like celebrity worship become increased compared to when, you know, the circles you were around compared to now? Does that, you know, like how they just people like go crazy?
Yes, because they've been elevated by media and by their own sense of insecurity.
Mm-hmm.
I remember going to concerts where you could put your hands on the stage, or if you were close enough in a chair, you could put your heels up on the stage.
Wow.
And there was no security. And that's, you know, even into the early 80s,
mm-hmm.
you literally could go right up to the stage.
That's an amazing. I can't even imagine that.
The hero worship, and they're unreachable now, and they're inaccessible, and they're like, some people think they're the final say, and they're the be all and do all, the moral arbiters of our culture, and it's all just a bunch of shit.
Yeah.
Well, that's my humble opinion.
No, I think I totally agree with you. Life. Right.
These are the best years of my life, chasing the Paisley pipe dream in the entertainment industry. Do you think the Grateful Dead give a fuck if you could pay your rent? Do you think Joe Rogan cares if you flip out on ayahuasca and go through a window or something? They don't give a damn, man.
Yeah, you're absolutely, you're 100% correct. It's just amazing to see. Like, I wonder if was this all this celebrity, I guess it had to start right around, you know, this hippie era and maybe Elvis before that, once information could be passed as quickly as it was then. But you don't see this until right around that time, this elevation of these people, these performers to a level that they're gods. They're immortal. I mean, people you know, when a celebrity dies, when Bob Saget dies, everyone tweets, you know, all right.
Here's a photo. You worship these people.
Yeah.
When Garcia died, I was torn up, and Frank Zappa too. I actually called off sick at work and lied and said I heard eagle dancing, and you know, it was tough, man. And then it even hurts just as bad when you find out these people are all agents; they're lifetime actors.
Mm. Yeah, and especially because you spend so much energy, you know, supporting them. That must be a crazy feeling to feel, or like a snap.
Yeah.
I want to pull up the peyote way one more time. So this church still goes on today.
Oh, yeah.
It still brings in people from all over
all over the world.
All over the world. And now it looks like from their website, they do the like you were saying, the walking trips.
The peyote experience is called a spirit walk.
A spirit walk. And I'm sure that brings in even more people that aren't necessarily involved with the church. They're just regular.
Oh yeah. People want to trip and take psychedelics under a legal umbrella.
Yeah.
That's right. Why I joined. I hadn't thought about peyote in about 25 years. And then I saw it in a magazine. I was in an office waiting for my turn to be called. And I saw High Times magazine with a letter that somebody wrote to Peyote Way. And I went, damn, I haven't seen the word peyote in 25 years. So I wrote in and got a membership and became quite close with them. They actually, two of the co-founders stayed at my house a half a dozen times, and two of their kids stayed at our house a couple of times.
So how old were you when you joined?
It was 1998. I don't know. I'm 64 now. Okay. I just turned 64.
So relatively recently you went into this group.
Yeah. I wanted to be able to take peyote again legally. And consequently, I at three or four times a year for several years, one of my Havasupai Indian friends would invite me over for a ceremony. And it's like, my health won't allow me to travel anymore, nor will expenses.
Yeah. Right.
But I did send you a picture of my last invitation. It was a red t-shirt with the tribal symbol, some eagle feathers, and a bunch of fresh cut peyotes on it. That was part of an invitation to me from my good friend, Damon. I've known him since about 1976.
Wow, Carl.
Dude, I can't make it over there anymore.
You need to write a book, dude. Like all these. Yes, you do. I mean, I would love to read about
this. You've got to be the fifth person that has told me that since the late 70s.
Well, you need to do it, Carl. Hilarious.
I'm stupid. I'm a 10th grade dropout. You're I don't know stupid. Anything about this kind of shit. I could barely struggle on the computer, but.
Your experience, I mean, that's just such an, you were in these circles of people that were, have been influential in changing millions of lives, of affecting our culture here. I mean, you were right in these circles for 20 years. I mean, that's crazy experience.
I have, you know, I've been around. I have been around and met a lot of people. I met and partied with a lot of people, some in the music industry. I have friends that are more plugged into the music industry than I am. I'm kind of a peripheral connections, 6 degrees of separation thing.
Yeah.
I've been involved with music since I was a little boy. And some of my childhood friends were some of the best musicians you'll never hear because they didn't have the breaks or the connections.
Right. Or they weren't in the military intelligence. Yeah.
Yeah. And there's a lot of stories. You know, I met and partied with Jorma Kaukonen from Hot Tuna, met and partied with several Hells Angels over the years and some other things. And I met and partied with Joan Baez. Has some great pictures of her sitting on my lap. With
no way.
Had a great party one night. My wife and I were one of two couples that were invited to a private party fundraiser. It was great. I got to meet her whole band. It was just an incredible night. I knew her cousin for a couple of years before he passed away from cancer. I fed Neil Young two nights in a row, and I was in an exhibition chef, and he was 5 feet away from me while I cooked his meal and jawed with him.
Oh, my God, Carl.
I worked both stations he sat at, so I got to cook his meal two nights in a row.
That is crazy. Dude, right? Your stories are, oh, my God.
Well, I got to say, I got to tell everybody, my life is a perfect example of how not to live your teenage and 20s. All I have is a bunch of stories and had a hell of a lot of fun, but I really, you know, my health is wrecked. My finances are gone, but I had a hell of a good time. And like I told you earlier, most of my friends have died because of the lifestyle.
Yeah.
And the ones that are left were like survivors. And it's like, holy shit, man, what the hell are we still around for?
Right.
And you know, it turns out everybody left that lifestyle for the most part. So, you know, I'm not bragging. I'm just telling you, I've been here and I can lay some stories out. And unfortunately, some of my friends that watch this stuff that have known me for 50 years, they won't chime in and confirm or deny. And they won't, you know, it's like, I love all of them. I love them all, man. I'm glad they're in my life.
And I see now on the Peyote Way website, Doctrine and Covenants, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints is the dietary code. So I see that connection. I know there's more than that of Mormonism, but it's interesting.
Well, it's in there. I shared the link.
Yeah. It's interesting that the Joseph Smith, and like how you said in the beginning, the anthropological fraud, how Joseph Smith, he paid for all these things to try and prove, you know, they created a whole false history. So I don't know if it's, but a whole different history of America prior to, you know, I forget what his theory, what he said, but, and they went digging all over that America. I forget, like, was it, you know, not like an Atlantis like place or something. And it's just,
you know,
I just find that interesting connection. Yeah. Right. Well, Carl, we got to do, cause everyone in the chat loved listening to you talk.
I didn't see any of the chat.
Damn. Oh man, maybe I'll you can if you watch, but yeah, you got so
I'll watch
many
it
people
on YouTube later.
Yeah, you got so many people that said, you know, you gotta have Carl on again. This is fascinating. Okay. So it really
please check the links out at Will.
Yeah. And if we want, guys, I'll post a lot of the links he sent me. And if you want or you're interested in learning more about this group and just another way to push it, you know, to get those outliers that are lost. And I think that's what the Carl definitely.
I insist on the links and attachments being up. I'm all about the citations.
Hey, I'll put them up here, Carl. So where can everyone find you?
YouTube channel. I'm on Facebook.
I know.
I smother everybody else on their YouTube channel and their Twitter channel. You can get me on Twitter, I guess, if you want.
Yes, Twitter. I'll put your Twitter handle. Carl's always, you can find him, and we've read the John Brissom's comment section on our comment section and many other places, I'm sure. He's a great, great person to know. So, Carl, thanks so much for being on the show. I'll get this stuff organized and post it either today or tomorrow. And we'll have to do round two once I watch more of your links and have a better understanding. And we'll do round two.
Well, thank you, sir, for giving me some time. I appreciate it. And I hope people really do go through as much as possible at their leisure.
Yes.
And learn about an ongoing operation that everybody seems to be ignoring that's exposing Mormons and Freemasonry. And Here, chew on this.
Yeah.
I have proof that I've been doing this since 2016. I got some screenshots. I started introducing this work in December of 2016. You know, I wrote the late Matthew North about it. I've written Mr. Irvin about it. And it took a couple of years before Steve Outram gave me a platform or an ability to share my work. And then John Brissom, bless his heart, he put me on too. So I've been at this a while and I've got so much more information. It's incredible.
I love it. We're going to have to do it.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Carl. You have a good night, and we're going to do this again. So we'll talk soon.
Thank you, sir.
All right, guys. See you, everybody. Bye-bye.
Thank you, everyone.